Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How many greys do you think you've killed over the years?
19, pretty much for sure.
Because that day, even though I was a kid, I knew for a fact that what we had just witnessed wasn't human.
The only way that I could describe it was that there was a shadow stood there.
I believe that it's potentially, I'm not saying 100% definitely, but potentially a real abduction caught on video camera.
Join Ash and me every Tuesday as we explore some of the lesser known but fascinating unusual stories from our unknown world. With the latest paranormal and UFO news, a look back at historical cases, and special guests joining us along the way, we aim to pursue the paranormal from a different point of view.
Pursuit of the paranormal with Ash and Greg.
Fearscape Media Network, exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time.
It's our birthday episode, woo! Woo! Come celebrate with us on March 17th, anywhere you listen to podcasts.
We look forward to having you and our special guests on with us. So we can't wait to put out this episode. Me and Lindsay are so excited for our anniversary. Come party with us.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, to another fantastic and awesome episode of the Convergence Enigma with Josh and Stefan. I am your host, Stefan Gearhart, and I am joined, as always, by the man who is out of this world, who loves to look at squirrels and does the most amazing twirl, Mr. Josh Rutledge. How are you, sir?
I am doing well. I am one with the world. See what I did there?
You are. Because you spin and you are thick, yep. Like the world.
Thick, yeah.
You it's are like just saying, a round ball.
Yeah, I'm big boned.
You're big bold. You're just a big bowl.
Big bowl, yeah.
Very big bowl. So we've got a really, really fun episode tonight. I'm really, really excited about this. If you haven't really, really noticed yet, I'm really, really pumped.
How pumped? Two really pumped.
Super pumped because Josh, you're getting ready to move out to Phoenix in June.
Yep,
it's almost here, man.
Yeah,
I already live here.
Like we've the hottest part of the year. I'm gonna move. So
and June's surprisingly not so bad. It's July and August.
Yeah.
July and August is the devil when the monsoon hits, and that humidity shows up out of nowhere. Ooh, lordy. But anyways, we're going to be talking tonight. Again, we've covered this once before, but now that I'm in Phoenix, it's a whole different world. We're going to be talking about the 1997 Phoenix Lights. But we aren't doing this alone, Josh. We have our good friend, probably my bestest bud here in Phoenix now that I've been here, Assistant State Director of Arizona MUFON and author himself, Mr. Shane Heard. So
I heard that.
I heard that. We are so very, very excited about having Shane back on. He's the best, man. And he also wrote The Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, A Beginner's Guide to Researching UFOs. And even our good buddy, Jason McClellan, did the foreword for this book. I mean, that's how perfect this is. I mean, Shane wrote an amazing book. If you want to be a field investigator for MUFON, grab this book.
Even we'll if you don't want to do it that. Officially for MUFON, you just want to get out there and do it. Just read the book.
You just want to do the thing. Get out there. Do it.
Be unofficial
if you gotta. But anyways, we've got Shane coming on the show. We're so pumped about that, man. We absolutely love Shane, and it's just an absolute pleasure having him back. But Josh, you know, just a quick reminder, you guys check out the UnX Network. You know, this is the new mainstream. We're here on the X. We're so very, very excited to be here every week, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you guys are listening to the podcast, you know we drop that at 9 p.m. So you get to hear it first on the UnX Network, and then you get to hear it on the Fearscape Media Network. We're very, very excited. We love you, UNX. Boomed shakalaka, boom shakalaka. I can do my best Race Hobbs voice. Thank you guys for tuning in. I just flipped into five different voices, not racist.
Yeah, you did.
All.
Totally.
His is more of the, in a world where man is listening to the UnX Network, people want to know, is Shane Heard's beard real?
It's like saying his beard.
Yes, it is.
That's where his magic comes from.
It is. That's where my magic comes from, is Shane's beard. But anyways, yeah, so check out them, the UNXnetwork.com. You can stream there, all kinds of stuff, or head over to fearscapemedia.com and check out all that jazz there. But Josh, let's go ahead and get to our first segment before we get to Shane and the Phoenix Lights, which is Psychic Word of the Week.
And now, the Psychic Word of the Week.
Psychic Word of the Week comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary from June G. Bletzer, PhD. Rest in peace, Honey Bear. We love you. We didn't even know you. As usual, we either flip through the pages until we land on something, or Josh gives me a number. This week, he gave me the number 444. So we flipped to that. And I looked down, and the first phrase that I see is also my favorite type of sandwich, which is open face trance. Open face trance. I love me some open faced sandwiches. If I can't cut it with a fork, it's not a sandwich.
Open face sloppy joes are the best.
Oh, dude, I can't even eat a sandwich as a sloppy joe. I can't even do it sandwich style anymore. Yeah. It's got to be open face, because then you get two. Anyways, so open face trance. Here's what this means. It says to speak out with intelligent new information with no previous preparation. Psychic rambles on, and when asked to repeat it, the psychic cannot. New data comes from either A, the superconscious mind and inspirational speaking. Two, a guide that attaches to the psychic's pineal gland, occurs in normal conversation if the listener needs the information or when psychic is asked to give an impromptu speech. Boy, that's almost kind of similar to one of the other ones we've used before. So unintentional somnambulism.
Somnambulism, yeah.
Whatever that was.
That's when, like, when you need help, you call a somnambulance. So.
Or Ghostbusters. Ooh.
But no, that also reminds me a lot of, like, the stuff, you know, when you kind of have your, when we're doing Estes things and stuff, and you kind of go into your trance mode. I mean, when I bring you out, you don't often remember what was said.
I wonder if that's what's happening, is that's my guide attaching itself to my pineal gland. I'm gonna need to look into that a little bit more, because I think we've established it's one of my guides that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah I mean, you can always ask them next time you're under, so, or I could.
Yeah, you do that.
Hey buddy, are you attached to Stefan's pineal gland?
Well, let me check. Zip. Yep. Anyways, very, very interesting. Pretty, pretty cool. Pretty, pretty pretty cool. All right, so let's go ahead and move to our next segment here, which is actually going to be a sponsored segment, Josh, but let's go ahead and get into some spooky news. So, Josh, before we get into the spooky news, can we talk about the sponsor for this week that we're going to be using that's sponsoring our spooky news segment?
Yep. So this is coming from Black Triangle Coffee.
Yum.
I mean, really fitting for tonight's episode, right? Because mm-hmm. they're named after the Phoenix Lights events. It's kind of the yep. Black Triangle is where that was established. And I mean, I got to tell you, I've got a couple of their bags of coffee that I went ahead and ordered. And it's awesome. And I've got
tasty, man.
I've got the Dark Theory, which is a really nice dark brew, which, you know, kind of has some flavor notes of like chocolate and some berries, which I definitely picked up on the berries when drinking
it.
And I also went ahead and picked up the 115 Unimpendium, which is based on, you know, Bob Lazar, that kind of secret element that made it all work. And it's a nice light roast. I mean, and it's fantastic. But they've got others like Skinwalker Espresso, and Somewhere in the Skies podcast has their own.
Yeah, Ryan Sprague, man. Gotta get it.
Yeah.
So, Sasquatch Cinnamon. That's my jam, dude.
And ET Vanilla. I guess because like ETs are gray, vanilla is kind of a grayish color.
It's the closest you can get, man. Skinwalker Espresso. I mean, there's some good stuff in here, man. I hope someday that we can get the convergence latte something, and it's a convergence of different flavors.
Yeah, just it's a mixture of light, dark, and medium.
No, it's roast. A mixture of all of the coffees of they have mixed into one. That's the convergence Enigma coffee. Just letting you guys know.
Also called the hodgepodge for short.
That's right. And so what can they do from here, Josh?
Yeah. So if you're interested in checking out Black Triangle Coffee, you can go to blacktrianglecoffee.com and use promo code TCE for the Convergence Enigma, BTC for Black Triangle Coffee 15, and get 15% off your whole order. So that, again, that's TCE BTC 15.
And we'll have this in the summary of the episode as well, so you'll be able to find it there, as well as a link to get the Black Triangle Coffee. So anyways, our spooky news this week, Josh, what we have is something you sent me, and it's out of this world. It's underworld, right? It's underworld stuff. This comes from bigthink.com, but this is pulled from a number of other places I've seen as well. The headline reads, Yale scientists restore cellular function in 32 dead pig brains. Holy crap, man. And there's a dead pig picture that looks like something out of a horror movie, man. And it says, the image of an undead brain coming back to live again is the stuff of science fiction, but not just any science fiction, specifically B-grade sci-fi. I take offense to that, by the way. What instantly springs to mind is the black and white horrors of films like Fiend Without a Face, bad acting, plastic monstrosities, visible strings, and a spinal cord that for some reason is also a tentacle. But like any good science fiction, it's only a matter of time before some manner of it seeps into our reality. This week's magazine Nature published the findings of researchers who managed to restore function to pigs' brains that were clinically dead, at least what we once thought of as dead. See, what's dead may never die, it seems. The researchers did not hail from the House of Greyjoy. What is dead may never die, but come largely from the Yale School of Medicine. They connected 32 pig brains to a system called BrainX. BrainX is an artificial perfusion system, and boy, BrainX sounds like a movie, that's for sure.
Oh, that's for sure, yeah.
Yeah, artificial system that is a system that takes over the functions normally regulated by the organ. The pigs had been killed 4 hours earlier at the U.S. Department of Agriculture slaughterhouse, their brains completely removed from their skulls. BrainX then pumped an experiment solution into the brain that essentially mimics blood flow. This is crazy. It brought oxygen and nutrients to the tissues, giving brain cells the resources to begin many normal functions. The cells began consuming and metabolizing sugars. The brain's immune systems kicked in. Neuron samples could carry an electrical signal. Some brain cells even responded to drugs. It's alive, I tell you. That's where we're at. They managed to keep some brains alive for up to 36 hours and currently do not know if BrainX can have sustained the brains any longer or not, because they just kind of cut it. Nanad Sistan says, it is conceivable we are just preventing the inevitable and the brain won't be able to recover. This is the lead Yale neuroscientist and researcher there. As a control, other brains received either a fake solution or no solution at all. None revived brain activity and deteriorated as normal. The researchers hope the technology can enhance our ability to study the brain and its cellular functions. One of the main avenues of such studies would be brain disorders and diseases, and this could point to ways to developing new treatments for the likes of brain injuries like Alzheimer's, Huntington's, or neurodegenerative conditions. And it goes on and on and on, even in getting into a little bit of ethical gray matter there. But that's the gist of the article there, and it's just absolutely fascinating, between being able to clone ears and doing all the things and now bringing pigs back to life.
Well, you know, that whole gets into the whole thing of if it's applicable for humans, you know, it gets into the whole discussion around if the soul has departed the body, will the soul come back to the body? But there's a lot of people who talk about having near-death experiences, seeing themselves being operated on the table but then coming back. So
I don't know. Pretty fascinating stuff, man. Pretty fascinating. You can go to bigthink.com/surprising science/zombie pigs BrainX. You'll be able to find it there. So have fun with that one. Anyways, Josh, if you're ready, I'm ready. Let's go ahead and get to Shane Hurd and the Phoenix Lights. All right. Thank you, guys. We are here with Shane Hurd, like we said, author extraordinaire, man with the beard that no one fears, except for me, because it's where my magic comes from. So thank you, Shane, for coming back on the show, man. We're so excited to have you, man.
Oh, thanks for having me. I've been really looking forward to it.
Dude, you were the first person in Phoenix that we talked to, and we've stayed friends this whole time, and it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah.
And I love that, man. And so tonight we're talking about the Phoenix Lights. We're hitting the 25th, and I think this is airing a few days, a couple days after the fact of the 25th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights. But you know, you being an Arizona resident, we thought it'd be cool to have you come on. We could chit chat about this. And so Josh, why don't you give us a little breakdown, break it down on the Phoenix Lights.
So just in case anybody's worried, we're not talking about the nightlife in Phoenix. This is not what the Phoenix Lights is about.
This is not the city lights that you can see from South Mountain, though you saw these from South Mountain.
On March 13th, 1997, covering an expanse going from the Nevada line through Phoenix to the edge of Tucson, about 300 miles or so, hundreds of people, probably thousands of people, saw these strange lights that kind of progressed across that line, and sometimes forming a V formation. That's, I think, where you kind of typically see that. You know, kind of a V a craft, if you will, with the lights. Because I don't know that anybody actually saw the distinct outline. I mean, this might be correct here, but there was more the lights forming the V pattern. And then it was, this is, of course, a very high level. It went over, saw by a lot of people, and then just disappeared over a mountain range, and then, seen again potentially in 2007. There was another occurrence that happened later in 2007, but then of course later in the evening on the 1997 occurrence, the military was out doing some stuff in an A-10 and did drop some flares later in the evening. And so that has been the debunkers.
Well, isn't that convenient?
Yeah. That has been the debunkers' single source of ammo, if you will. They were just flares. So
even look, okay, we all know what flares look like. I'm gonna debunk the debunk, okay? We all know what flares look like. They don't just sit there in a ball and just, they're streaky, they're smoky.
Yeah,
all of these things that when they did do the flares, they saw those things happen. They right. saw the streaks. They saw the this lasted forever. And weren't you saying something about like this was an event that people could see from Nevada to Tucson or something along those
lines?
Yeah,
so it tracked like 300 miles, from the Nevada line all the way through Phoenix and across over to the edge of Tucson before it disappeared. So, I mean,
some good flares, man.
Flares don't do that. I mean, I have seen some
good flares. Well, I'll tell you what, cops are going to stop and help that truck. That's for sure.
I mean, I have seen some military flares that do have, like, you remember the little men that you would get with the parachutes and the cereal box?
Yes.
You throw them and they kind of flutter down. I mean, I've seen flares that have like a little parachute type thing that kind of allows it to stay suspended in the air for a long time. But you're still right. I mean, it still kind of smokes and there's no confusing a flare for anything else. And a flare, even if caught by the wind, wouldn't stay in the sky across 300 miles. Sorry, debunkers.
That's weak.
I mean, all you got to do is go to YouTube and literally type in military flares at night, and you will see that they don't look anything like what the hundreds of videos and pictures that exist out there of the Phoenix lights, man. I mean, this year was already a crazy year because you've got Hale Bopp, the comet, right? When did Hale Bopp happen? Because I had to be around the same time because Chris McLennan, she was out there looking, right? She was trying to get a close up of the Hale Bopp, the comet. Because remember, that hung in the year for like the whole year. We had Heaven's Gate happening that year and the Phoenix lights. I mean, holy moly, man. Like, what a. And that was the year Josh and I graduated high school.
It was very eventful. No, that's right.
Were you here for that? Shane, I can't remember if we talked about that or not.
Yeah. In fact, I remember exactly what I was doing that night. Now, I didn't see anything, unfortunately, but we were at some friend's house in North Scottsdale for the purpose of having dinner and checking out the Hale Bopp comet with the telescope, which we did. And I think we got home around 9:30, 10 p.m. And that's when it started splashing on the local news.
Yeah, because it's happening around 8:30.
Yeah, and so behind Josh there, he's got the green screen or whatever of the actual imagery that the local television stations caught. It was around 10 p.m.-ish. And by the end of that, their broadcast, it comes on at 10 p.m. here in Arizona. And they started, flashing that video. And it was, it was pretty impressive. And I wasn't actually really into UFOs at all at that time. But I mean, it was kind of in the back of my mind.
Sure.
But because of other things in life, I just wasn't paying attention.
Much like us, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, my daughter was 10 years old at the time, just to, show the age gap between us.
Right.
But for me, it was like, what's this on the news type of thing? And then what ensued the months thereafter really gripped me because it was like, it was a significant event. Even if you didn't have any knowledge of UFOs, it was still very significant and it was treated that way in the media. Mm-hmm. And then, so then I started paying attention and started connecting dots, different things that came up, I'm sure we'll talk about, but I was really intrigued, and that really started my journey into UFOs because, hey, this thing happened in my own backyard, and that always gets us, right? It's home, and this incredible event happened here, and so it really caught my attention, and that kind of launched me into my UFO career, I guess you would say.
Yeah, it's amazing. The what makes it so remarkable is the amount of people that saw it and how far it traveled. I mean, and Art Bell, he lost his mind. He thought the second coming of Jesus was here. I mean, this is the best thing that ever happened to Art Bell, in my opinion, because ratings at the time were standard. You always had UFO nuts and conspiracy theory nuts listening to Coast, but after the Phoenix lights, everybody was tuning in because everybody said, if anybody's going to talk about this the way we want to talk about it, it's going to be Art Bell, especially him being so close to the event.
Yeah.
I love Art Bell, man.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, buddy.
Great. Yeah, he was awesome. And yeah, that event was fuel for, you know, UFO, you know, information hitting the mainstream. You know what I mean? Like you said, you know, it's kind of conspiratorial and all that. But that was really mainstream. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but just, you know, the media, the local media, the local government, and then, you know, it went national. Like I think the picture behind you, Stephen, is the what's the name of that newspaper? They're the ones that took it national.
Yeah, I edited it out the the part that had the newspaper there. Hold on, I can tell you.
I'm brain cramping at the moment.
USA Today.
USA Today.
Yeah.
So when that article hit, then that's when it went bananas, right? So we in Arizona kind of flirted with this thing for, you know, a month or two until they picked up on it. And then when they did, it just kind of went crazy. But, you know, that's a significant illustration behind you, Stephen, because that, you know, that was based on eyewitness testimony and from multiple people. And that's what's so amazing about this case. This is truly a mass sighting, modern day. So the only one I can think of that might be comparable is the one that happened with the Fatima thing in Spain and that.
Yep.
You know, I think that was around 1911 or something in there. But this thing, I mean, you're talking modern technology. There is imagery, you know, there's video, you know, there's radar. There's a lot of stuff that makes this way different than any other sighting up until that time. It was hugely significant, and in my opinion, it still is, because it's unresolved.
Yep, and that's what's fascinating is I can't wait for the 13th, even though this is airing after the fact. But the 13th, because I don't watch a lot of local TV, but boy, I'm about to, because you know every news station is gonna hit it up. You know, I'm gonna go to that the 25th anniversary documentary. Alice Cooper's gonna be there, like, just because he saw it too. Famous people. I mean, Kurt Russell talks about flying over Phoenix while it was happening, like Kurt Russell, dude. This, I mean, rich people saw this, poor people saw this, every race and color of people saw this, every aspect of humanity saw this. People recorded it left and right, credible, non-credible, it doesn't matter. That's what makes this so incredible.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that, like, well, I said, the fact that it traveled so far, like, you don't see that. That's just not a thing. And flares don't go, like, aren't going to go 300 miles, obviously.
Well, it was a parade. It was a demonstration.
Oh, yeah.
There's no question about it. Its intent was to be seen by many. And it was. And I mean, was just a slow procession from Henderson, Nevada, all the way down into Mexico.
It's almost
over Phoenix through Tucson.
It's almost like everything. They were coming in to watch Hail Bop 2, right? It's almost like how we go to the 4th of July and everybody's in the lake, you know, they got their boats out and they do the little parades and they're having fun and all this stuff. And they're like, oh, it's time for the fireworks, you know, like, that's this. It's like, hey, we're coming to see Hail Bop 2. We're just as fascinated by this comet.
So I think it was really more of a, they knew we were going to be out looking at Hail Bop.
Yeah.
And so they knew people were going to be looking at the night sky to see Hail Bop. So here's a time for us to fly over and make our presence known.
Yeah, many people have that feeling. I mean, us MUFON folks and many other investigators and even the military and law enforcement. I mean, it clearly was some sort of a demonstration. Mm-hmm. Whatever the point we're supposed to get, it was evident that this was intentional and significant in that respect. So it's unparalleled, I think, in modern ufology.
Well, you know, I love it. The initial report is one of my favorites, saying it hit about 6:55 PST. Man reporting seeing a V-shaped object above Henderson, Nevada, said it was the size of a Boeing 747 and sounded like rushing wind. Had six lights on its leading edge, and the lights reportedly traversed northwest to the southeast. Like, just, and then the next person was an Arizona cop.
Well, I mean, you know, at that time, right? I think at that time, Pacific, in Nevada in March, it would have been what, dusk? It wouldn't have.
Oh yeah,
have been yeah. dark then.
6:55, because that's about right now, and the sun's been setting around 6:55.
Yeah.
Okay. So dusk. So still enough light out to make out a shape, and to make out to have a better sighting than just a light in the sky.
Oh yeah, there would definitely be some sunshine. I mean, like the UFO I just saw a couple weeks back, like that one was right at dusk at the sunset. Like yeah. that was beautiful, beautiful.
Also,
in over South Mountain.
Wow. Cool.
Also, I think it's really interesting. When I was, I've been recently read the book about Stardust Ranch, and of course that happened in Buckley, right? Just on the other side of the mountains there, south of Phoenix, and the events that started at Stardust Ranch and the Phoenix Light event are within like 6 months of each other. So I just,
yeah. I mean, even if you talk to Dr. Lynn Kitai, really this event was preceded by several events that she had witnessed from her home, which is in Paradise Valley, and it's sort of an elevated area.
Yeah, it's not far from where I live.
Over the city. Yeah. Oh, what are you, rich?
No, I said near, Shane.
Okay, that's
I'm in
right.
Moon Valley. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Well, it's not a paradise. It's just hard to breathe.
Yeah. But she had observed and photographed orbs around her home and over which, kind of overlooks the city. Kind of the south, southwest, where ultimately the lights, like Josh has displayed there, really could be seen from her own. But she had seen these, orange-colored orbs over multiple occasions, had photographed those. And so this preceded the Phoenix Lights event, but she has also seen these post that event. And so there's a lot of things I think that are connected. So like you mentioned Josh with Stardust Ranch, and I think his name's John Edwards or
yep, that's right. John Edmonds.
And Edmonds. And that's in the Southwest Valley, Buckeye. And that's immediately north of the Estrella Mountains, which those lights in your photo behind you appeared. Now, beyond that is the it's really a gunnery range that, is an area where they do test flights and they do flares and, weapons testing and that kind of thing. But, that's, quite a ways back behind that.
Is that the Barry Goldwater range?
Barry Goldwater, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting. The Estrella Mountains, it's spelled Estrella. Actually, for Native Americans, that means the Star Mountains. Very kind, very interesting. And so a lot of the tribes that we know here in Arizona, yeah. Hopi, Apache, Navajo, they all have a relationship with these star people, as
right.
they call them. And so these kind of events aren't really a shock to them. They experience this quite frequently. And I know I have the privilege of knowing a couple of the Navajo Rangers, John and Stan, and they have just related to me some amazing events that they have experienced in their 30-year career as Navajo Rangers and sort of the paranormal guys, and all of this stuff just fits right in with what they experience as well. So we think it's unique, and I think it is unique in the sense that this was done right over a huge population.
Yeah.
Like I say, this is very intentional. But they experience stuff like this, on the reservations,
all the time.
Rather frequently. So it's amazing. This stuff is around us all of the time. But in this case, thousands of people saw it, thousands of people reported it, whether it was to MUFON or New Fork, which is the National UFO Reporting Center out of Washington State, Peter Davenport, to local police, to news stations, everything. I mean, this was just incredible. And, I think we'll probably chat a bit about the state's reaction, the state of Arizona, its leader.
Of course.
And some of the other leaders who took it serious but got ridiculed. I mean, there's so much to this case. I've wrote about it in my book because to me, not only is it an incredible UFO, you know, demonstration or case or evidence, but it's really a case study in people.
Yeah.
And I've always said, you know what, UFOs, it's really about people and our reaction to it. And so we get a slice of like, hey, how does the government react in this case? How does the media react in this case? How does your average citizen react in this? I mean, it's a total case study for the modern response of all of these entities, you know, to a UFO event. So it's a fascinating case.
Another correlation here is that it happened 20 years to the year from the release of Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Oh.
Interesting.
I did not think about that.
Synchronicity.
Cool. And, yes. And the idea that, you know, we've talked about it, that there was that kind of weird influx of introduction of money to that project, to the Close Encounters of the Third Kind project. And there's a lot of speculation that maybe that was being somehow funded by the government as a means of, like, you know, preparing people for things to come. And then 20 years later to the year, Phoenix Lights
it came.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, so Josh and I don't call skeptics skeptics anymore. We call them debunkers because that's what they are, because we are skeptics. But the debunkers that are out there, one of the big things they always talk about with UFOs and UAPs is, why do they always go to some farm where nobody's at? It's always just some redneck guy that's out there and sees it. Who's going to believe that? Well, here we are back in 1997. The population of Phoenix, just the metro area, was 2,625,000 people. And they forget about events with, like, UFOs coming over the Pentagon or the Kremlin or things like that. These things that they say never happened. Well, here, you know, you're saying, why would they go to Phoenix? Well, maybe to show those debunkers, hey, you think that we always just go to farms and stuff? Well, here, let's show a city what we got.
Yeah.
One of the largest in the country.
And like you said, you know, the fact that people would be out looking, again, one of my kind of personal theories about why is Arizona a hot spot for reports is because, look, we have great weather. You know, we don't see, I'm from Washington State, and where I lived, it was just tall pines everywhere, and you don't see a lot of sky. But here in Arizona, you don't have that. And I mean, the sky is huge, right? Yeah. It's just from horizon to horizon. It's beautiful.
I
and
love
it's clear.
How big the sky is.
Yeah, the weather's always, you know, 300 days a year. It's perfectly clear and stuff. And then, you know, you guys know our lifestyle here. We're, you know, always hiking and, you know, there's softball going on and soccer games and leagues.
Year round.
Yeah, year round. And just people are always out. So I think just the matter of the fact that people are out and they can see, you know, we see a lot of reports. So again, why'd they pick Arizona? Maybe that's why. A lot of people were going to be out for the occasion of Hellbop. They were going to be out anyway. Clear weather. I mean, that I do remember that evening. It was clear as a bell. It was, you know, a good temperature. We were out in our shirt sleeves and looking in the telescope. So, I mean, it just seems too coincidental for all of these things to come together for it to be a complete anomaly. I mean, I think there was some intention there.
Agreed.
Well, and I mean, if you think about the first sighting, right, is in Henderson, Nevada, which is just right southeast of Vegas. I mean, for all we know, it flew over Vegas and nobody saw it because the lights are so bright that, you know, you know, the light pollution.
Or it
could have
been daytime enough and it, you know, just got reflected as well. Because that's something about the desert, is the daytime is much brighter because it's reflecting off of sand and rock as opposed to dark green things. Right. So the daytime tends to be a little brighter.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I always tell people that, you know, that in the summer or just when the sun is out and it's really intense, it washes all the color out, right? When you look out with your naked eye, you're, you know, super bright, it washes the color out. And so, you know, I think that effect is true, but, you know, maybe they just decided to decloak there.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and it's really interesting too, that Henderson is only 100 miles southeast from Nellis Air Force Base too. So,
Area 51.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So, I mean,
just a lot of coincidences.
Yeah. Too many.
This, you know?
too many for it to be coincidental.
This is why I'm glad I moved here. Like, because everything just is, no pun intended, but converged here.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you're talking about Arizona and all the things, you know, yes, you get a lot of sightings and stuff out there, but you also have all the vortices in Sedona.
Yep.
All that, you know, the high energy fluctuation that happens out there with all the quartz crystal and everything. So, I mean, it really is. Arizona is just a really magical place. And obviously, I think so because I'm moving there. So
awesome. But, can't wait.
Yeah.
No, me too.
You know, the other thing, too, is the military presence here. You know,
yes.
There's quite a bit here, and there's a lot of military industry here as well. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to think those things correlate. We also have one of the largest, I won't go there. One of the largest nuclear power plants in the nation, Palo Verde Nuclear Plant, which is incidentally just a few miles west of Buckeye.
Yep.
Wow. Right. So again, convergence of all these coincidences or you know interesting touchstones in the whole theory of ufology just kind of all line up here, and that event seemed to just take advantage of all of that.
And it's interesting, just personal synchronicities. Like, I was just speaking to Mary Dees Hampton yesterday. She's the widow of James Hampton, the actor. And I was just talking to her, and I found out she has a brother that lives here, and he had moved here to go work at Palo Verde. And he made so much money, he retired in 10 years. So that's the first time I had even heard really about the nuclear plant was literally yesterday. And then here we are today talking about, you know, just those odd synchronicities. And even here we are 25 years out from Phoenix Lights, and we're finding just talking about that led to this, that's led to that. So I love that stuff.
Yeah. But, you know, you talk about the so real quick, you kind of mentioned it, local government response.
Yeah, I was like, can we talk about Governor Barney Fife Symington here?
You know, of course, the thing that I think is probably etched for anybody who saw it, you know, on the news or even rebroadcast around the country was the parade of the captured person who was behind everything. You know, the guy coming out in the big alien suit and everything, and then they do the unmasking, you know, like a Scooby-Doo, you know, type situation there.
Yeah.
Boy, you know, he thought that was going to kill.
Yeah.
And it did kill his career.
Yeah. You know, I saw a...
People were pissed, let me tell you.
I saw an interview that he did for a documentary maybe last year or something where he basically walked it all back. He said he wished he would have never done it.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he had his own experience later on that year. And, you know, he was trying to like, you know, but he's like, I can't recover from it. That's like, like forever stained against my reputation as that stuff.
Yeah. He's a big UFO guy now.
Yeah.
It took a long time.
Well, and, you know, if you kind of, again, being a local at the time, you know, he was an embattled governor. He had a rough time. Right out of the gate, he was a former developer. He had a lot of people kind of critical of him. He had made some, you know, not good choices and some financial deals, but blah blah blah, right? So he was already having a tough time governing, and when this came down, I mean, no leader wants to deal with this, right? That's
right.
Just, you know, it's just too many unknowns. But and so, you know, he did what you would expect a political person to do and try and minimize it and excuse it and all those things. And but, you know, he didn't do a good job with that because mocking thousands of your constituences statewide is not a cool political move. And people were insulted by that because, again, remember, these aren't like UFO interest people. These are just your average Joe, right?
Yep.
But they looked up and they saw something that scared the crap out of them.
Yeah.
They saw it. It was real. They wanted a doggone explanation from their government, you know? And what they got was, Ah, it's a joke. It's nothing, you know. Yeah. Oh, man, that just... That made me mad, and I wasn't even that interested in UFOs at that time. But I'm like, dude, yeah. you're insulting people. This is ridiculous. So that was such a debacle. But, you know, he really ate crow later, right? And I think it was 2007 when he was doing the... He was being interviewed by James Fox for his second movie, Out of the Blue.
Yeah.
And he just kind of dropped the bomb to James, and James says my jaw hit the floor because he just we're having a conversation and he said you know the Phoenix lights and stuff and many people saw it and I saw it too, and that was the first time he had said that. And James just went what? And so you know now that's history, but you know you can understand why a political person would want to minimize it, and he said at the time I didn't want there to be panic, and that's an old cliche bull crap
standard crap,
but, But, you know, basically he's like, I didn't want to have to deal with it. And I was going to dismiss it in this way, but that blew up in my face. So, but, you know, to his credit, he came back later and, you know, he's been a pretty solid dude supporting it. In fact, he spoke at the, was it the International UFO Conference a year or two?
I believe so. Yeah. He's been showing up on a lot of documentaries, actually. Like, he's a big proponent for it now. And I think that's his penance. He's trying to make up for it,
make it right.
Well, this is what I always say. You know, personally, I've not had a UFO experience. I wished I would have. I haven't. You know, I do this out of intellectual curiosity and stuff. But, you know, I always say this. There is probably nothing in the world to make you a believer by seeing one.
Right.
And so that changed his whole world. He saw it, and in spite of all the pressure in his whole life, you know, I'm a military man, I'm a governor, blah, 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 all this stuff. And, you know, wow, now I have to acknowledge the reality of it. So talk about a life changer. So anyone has seen one, I think that's true.
Yeah, imagine if he had had that beforehand, right? How different he would have treated that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. Frances Barwood was a councilwoman at the time, and she launched the investigation into the event. And she said, though, later on that of the 700 witnesses that she interviewed, the government never interviewed a single one. Not one.
Yeah. Shocking. Yeah. In fact, you know, I'll disclose this. I am a employee of the city of Phoenix, and I have been for 20 years. And in fact, this whole event happened only 2 years before I began working for the city. And I do remember her. And, you know, I really felt bad for her because she was very earnest. You know, she was just, she was doing the logical thing. She just said, hey, shouldn't we look into this? And she got ripped. I mean, this is the height of, you know, UFO ridicule. To the extent that I believe that it most likely ended her career because people, they did not want to hear it. They didn't want anything to do with it.
Like, because that's why people don't come forward is because of that.
Well, you know, you mentioned that, you know, the governor saw his, you know, he had his sighting and that changed his mind. And we talk about that quite a bit is that, you know, when you share your experience with other people, that's really just to let them know that they're not alone. But the only way you're going to ever sway that person is for them to have their own experience. And so, you know, it's just, you know, so it's nice that he now comes forward and says, yes, I had that experience. You're not alone. But yeah, it definitely could have been handled. Yeah, definitely could have been handled a lot differently then. I don't think we've ever gotten an actual report from the U.S. government for that. Like, we've not gotten the swamp gas or it was Venus or any kind of generic response like that, even from the government for that event.
Just the flares is as close as
we got. Flares is the
attached to helium balloons, by the way.
Yeah, which I feel like they scrambled that A-10 and did those flares on purpose. So.
Yeah, exactly. I'll give you a little fun fact, though. So the image behind Stefan, that was created by the USA Today, but it was based on the testimony of a man named Tim Lay. And Tim Lay, resided in the area of Phoenix called Sunny Slope. It's sort of North Phoenix, and it's a little bit mountainous, and then it kind of, you know, looks over the valley, kind of like Lynn Kitai's place, but very different areas. However, so that photo or that image was created based on his testimony. Well, where Governor Fife Symington went to see this thing was a park very near Sunny Slope. So in fact, that may be the very thing that he saw, because it was at the location and time the same as Tim Lay. So I think that's kind of interesting. And the words that he spoke still resonate with me. And the way he put it was, I saw it, and it had the appearance of something otherworldly. I just think that's an awesome term. Otherworldly. And I think we could all kind of relate to that, right? You can't put your finger on what it is, but you do realize what it isn't, you know. Yep. Something worldly, right? Something that's common and that you see. Yeah. So I just think that's so cool. So there's, you know, a little bit of connection there. Tim Lay, USA Today, Governor Fife Symington, the whole thing. I mean, there's just, like you say, so many synchronicities. It's amazing.
Yep. And Lynn was on, so we're recording this on the 10th, and Lynn was on Jimmy Church's show Fade to Black last night, which was really fascinating, which is another show that's on the UNX network here. But she's just absolutely fascinating. And I love her tenacity for this. To, you know, it's almost like the way she comes at it, in my opinion, is like, when someone had someone who passed on and doesn't want them to forget who they were, right? That it's almost like a widow that's coming out and saying, no, my husband was important, my wife was important, this. That's how she is with the Phoenix Lights. I mean, she has never stopped being in the spotlight for it. And I don't mean that in a negative way.
Yeah, she is a cheerleader for that event.
Yes, and that's cheerleader. And, that's a good word.
And I'm very grateful to her, because, you know, these things can kind of fade with time and the importance of them. But she has really been tenacious in her keeping this alive. And I think, Stefan, you mentioned it, next week or the 20th.
Yeah, the 20th.
You know, the 20th, she puts on an annual event every year, a big movie theater. And she brings in, you know, she plays her movie, you know, that the documentary on it, which is constantly updated. So there's multiple versions of it. So she displays the latest version, and then she brings in panels of people to speak, you know, whether it's witnesses or, you know, experts or whatever. And like you mentioned, Alice Cooper's coming this year, which is really cool. So, you know, kudos to her. And you know, she's created a coloring book for kids, which I think is actually brilliant, because one of my things, look, I'm an old dude, I'm 60 years old, and I'm not even the oldest among ufologists now, right? We've seen the likes of Stan Friedman and others, and we need to pass this down to another generation to keep it going and keep the pressure on to get this, you know, out there. And she's even reaching young kids like that. And it, you know, it's really well done. And I have two granddaughters, 10 and 12. Well, actually they're 11 and 12 now. And the oldest one, she is really into the topic, and you know, it's really cute, but on the other hand, it's very cool, because, you know, for them, it's a normal thing, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's not anything to be ridiculed about. It's, you know, it's on par with other kind of scientific mysteries that we have, whether it's Egyptology or other things, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think that's so important to do. And the thing is we're on the cusp, I think, of really learning some fantastic things. You know, obviously since 2017 with the release of those gun camera footage videos.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, most recently, I don't mean to plug this, but I want people to know about this guy. His name's John Ramirez, and he's a retired CIA officer in high level. He's a GS-15, and he just got on the circuit. He has a wonderful presentation to help people. And this is what's so cool. They literally, the CIA has reached out to the UFO community and said, here, look, this is what we know. This is the information we have. This is how to go about getting information from us through FOIAs.
Yeah.
And then this history, this deep, rich history of the CIA and other governmental intelligence agencies' involvement with not only UFOs, but, you know, remote viewing and all sorts of psi stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, it was, I have to say, I was probably one of the most impactful presentations I've ever experienced since I've been in ufology. And I know, Stefan, you were there too. Mm-hmm. And we were talking
it was
about
incredible.
It was a friggin' mind blower. So, but my point is that, and I'll even give you guys this little tidbit, because I was able to interview him in addition to his presentation. Ooh. And we had opportunities to talk before, during, and after. Yep. And one of the things I asked him is, you know, or I said, I really hope we know what's going on before I die, you know, in my lifetime. That's the one thing I would like to know. And he says, oh yeah, don't worry about it. It's going to be very soon. So that really caught my attention. And he is part of the government's intention to disclose. Now, we can go to a whole disclosure conversation, but and I think disclosure is already happening, or it's happening.
Oh, yeah.
And it's more of a confirmation than a disclosure, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, I really appreciate having someone like that to bring out factual information. And I mean, in his presentation, he cited websites, you know, CIA website for this topic and this.
Dude,
topic and
how great was it, Shane? As we're all sitting there taking pictures and taking pictures, and he's like, "Don't worry, guys, I'm giving you all of this." Like,
awesome.
I know, and spoiler alert. Out. We're going to he's going to be on our show down the road. We're working on some dates right now with the man, but it's going to be, I can't wait, because thing with John Ramirez
see it.
Is that he is also spiritually minded, which is something Josh and I have found a way to mix in spirituality with our UFO consciousness and paranormal. And that's what the Convergence Enigma is really all about and things like that. And I cannot wait to dig into his brain.
Yeah.
On the metaphysical side of things too. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. What a fascinating dude. And he's just kind of a quiet guy.
Oh yeah.
Never know.
Yes. He is so I'm in government myself, and I know how high level government people behave and how they think and how they articulate. And he was aces on that. He was super controlled in what he said. But he wasn't deceptive. And, you know, if he said, "I can't tell you that," he said it.
You're right.
But he says, "I can tell you this," or
yes.
This my personal speculation.
He gave so many freaking clues. And I'm like, I had to go back the whole time. And I was just like running back through. I was like, okay, where did he say this? Okay, he was just like wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know?
Yeah, it was fantastic. But I'm thrilled you guys are going to get him and have him on the show, because it people have got to see this guy. And it's not like a whistleblower thing.
In fact,
presentation begins, he says, "This is the CIA's statement about my presentation.
Right.
They have reviewed every word and authorized me to say everything here."
Everything.
Let me tell you, you will crap your pants.
Yeah.
And
he even
said what he says.
And that's what he says. He's like, "You would be surprised if you know how to ask," and he teaches everyone how to do their FOIA requests better. He's like, "What information you will be given?" Because most people just assume that the government's not going to give that information. And he's like, "No, I even learned through this how much is not blacked out."
Yes. Yeah. And he's a big fan of John Greenwald, you know, the Black Vault. And John, since he was 15 years old, began FOIA requests. And he has, I think, the largest accumulation of government documents outside of the government itself, like 2 million.
Black Vault, man.
But he knows John. I mean, they've communicated. So, but I thought what he was saying was super valuable to people who are initiating FOIA requests, because he tells you exactly who to ping, what to say to get a response, you know. So I think that was really helpful. So again, I feel like, you know, this was a very sincere guy, sincere presentation, information that you're just gonna blow your socks off. I mean, it's amazing. So,
but he's an Arizona guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I thought.
He and his wife have moved here to Arizona. So, and he loves Arizona, and for the reason we've already talked about.
Yeah. I'm already thinking about how I can install like my psionics on my house to just sit there and video the night sky every single night.
Yeah, Josh's new house, like his bedroom looks at the superstitions.
Oh, how cool. And that is an awesome area. I mean, in fact, we have our monthly MUFON meetings and we have a presentation and all that stuff. But when the weather's right, so kind of like March through maybe June-ish, we'll do, we go to the Superstition Mountains and we do a sky watch, and we bring telescopes and night vision and all that stuff. And everyone's welcome to come. And let me tell you what a great time that is, right? You just, you know, hanging out with your buds and
I just,
you know,
I love Arizona. I love Arizona MUFON, man, and Phoenix MUFON. I love what you guys do because Kentucky is just there's not an active thing. I mean, it's not like you guys do events and speakers and it's the club I was always looking for in high school.
You're welcome, buddy. Both of you.
Oh, yeah, man. Going to that with John Ramirez and getting to meet everybody. And
yeah, that was cool.
Like, checked out a book from the library. Like, I'm going,
when I joined the Jeep Club locally a couple of years back, like, that's what I was looking for. Unfortunately, I didn't find it with the Jeep Club. So now I'm just, you know.
Well, look, I'm going to name drop here and I'm going to brag a little, but boom. I just want to give you guys the experience. I mean, I've sat around the campfire with Richard Dolan and we've BS'd, or John Alexander, or, you know, David Hatcher Childress, and blah, blah, blah. All of these, they come to Phoenix and they give their presentation. We go out to lunch and then we hang out by the fire at night. And, you know, I mean, the experience is so freaking cool and fun. And, you know, I just, I love it. I mean, you know, when I first got into this, I was all scared to let everyone know I was part of a religious organization and they were going to poo-poo that. And, you know, just at the time it was pre-2017. So you had to hide it. And again, in my work, I'm in a very professional environment. It's all engineers and information technology people. And I was so nervous that people would think I'm a nut and everything. But actually, once I hit about 55, I said, I don't give a, you know, what people think of me. I'm going to do what I want to do. And so to everybody. But what I found out is actually everybody is pretty darn interested. And they're just not going to say it out loud. But yeah, now
they're all waiting for somebody they're always waiting for somebody to raise their hand. That's what they're all waiting for. Yep. It's me. Yeah,
exactly.
I'll go first.
Yes, exactly. So I started, you know, I wrote a book and that came out in 2020. And I even got brave enough that I have copies on my desk at work. And you know, it's just a conversation starter. And then, you know, people want it and I sign it for them and everything. It's just a lot of fun. And, but, you know, I'm just, I feel like, you know, the taboo was such a, you know, had such a hold on people, and it didn't mean to, because everyone's really thinking the same thing. I'm interested in that, you know, I just can't say it. But like you said, once you start the conversation, boom, people are like, oh, what do you know about this? And what about this? And oh, I think this and that. And that's what's so cool about UFO. It transcends every other kind of thing, right? Male, female, young, old, you know, Republican, Democrat, whatever thing you want to divide people with. This thing is so universal, no pun intended, that it, you know, it's just a great, fun thing. I just love it. And, you know, when I tell people I'm assistant director of MUFON and stuff, they're like, what? You know, but it's just, you know, it's a great bunch of people. You guys know, I mean, that's why we hit it off, right? You have this common interest and you find out people are very cool about it. And, you know, it's a very uniting kind of thing. Yeah. And I'm so thrilled I became a part of it.
It's like and this is going to sound so nerdy, but it's like space Boy Scouts, you know? It's like, even when I was in Boy Scouts, I wanted to focus so much on astronomy and all that stuff, but it was so limited. And it's almost like MUFON gives us that that badge work again, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, because like I said, you get to go to the mountains of the Super Saiyan, especially here in Phoenix, man. Yeah. And go do all this stuff, because it's more than just UFOs. It's like we all have this massive interest in the stars. Mm-hmm. Like,
yep, very true.
I'm always looking up. Doesn't matter the time of day. I step outside. First thing I do is look up.
Me too. Every night before I go to bed, I'm out there checking it out. Yep. And then, because I'm an old dude, I wake up at 3 a.m. quite frequently. And you know what I do? I go outside and I look around. And it's probably weird, but I live out in the boonies, so nobody pretty much is going to see me. But, you know, I go out there and I look around and, you know, I see stuff, interesting things. So, you know, it's just, it's become a way of life. It's just an interest that, you know, keeps me motivated and then puts me in contact with the most awesome people. And that's what UFO people are, really.
Yeah.
They're open-minded. You know, they're not judgmental, that whole thing. I mean, you run across, you know, stuff like that, of course, but for the most part. And then, you know, when you wrap in, not only, you know, for me, MUFON was the ticket, because again, as I mentioned, I've been in government for 20 years. I know I can function in a big organization. And when I got into it, I looked around, like, you know, I studied everything for about 5 years. I read 100 books and everything. And I thought, but, you know, at some point I'm like, you know, I don't want to just read about other people's experience. I want to have one of my own. I want to participate. I want to engage.
You know, and you know what, though?
Was the ticket for me.
And you know what, Shane? You probably have more than you realize, but your investigator mode probably kicks in more, and you probably write off some of it. You know, like, I bet you've seen more than you even realize.
Yeah, I actually had... Okay, so I'll confess here. I have what I think was an experience, and in fact I submitted it to MUFON before I was a MUFON member or anything. And it was from my home here, and it was, you know, like 6 a.m. on a Thursday morning, and I saw an unusual object. And let me just say, I know it's unusual. I've lived here 22 years, and every day the same time, same place, I've done the same thing, and I know what's anomalous and what's not. And this thing was, and I got it on video. I submitted it, and they came back and said, you know, well, most likely it was, you know, an airplane or a drone or something, which I get that. I mean, I do that now, right? You have to kind of weigh the odds, right? You know, because let me put it this way. You see a light in the sky, right? Very common. You look at it and you think it's anomalous, and it very well may be anomalous, but can you identify it? No, it's a light in the sky.
Right.
Now you might check flight radar 24, eliminate planes. You might check heavens above, and you might eliminate satellites and go down the list. And there's a list of about 20 things. And it's a process of elimination from the most obvious to the least. But when you get down to the end and you go, I don't know what it was, you either have to say, look, the odds are it is something explainable, let's say a satellite, because we know they exist,
right?
Versus it's an alien. Well, we don't have quote proof in the existence of aliens at this moment that the public knows about, right?
Right.
So what are you going to say? You got to say, well, you know, most likely it was this. And MUFON will never say this is what it was,
right?
What they will do is say it most likely was this based on these facts, right? That's what an investigation does.
Right.
And so, like you said, Stefan, for me, I'm skeptical, not in that I don't, it's not that I don't believe in the possibility of the existence of aliens, because I'll tell you one thing, there is a phenomena, and that's a proven fact.
Yeah, right? That's exactly what I was going to follow up with.
It's a proven fact, there's a phenomena. Now, what it is, that's not proven yet.
Yeah.
So you have to be careful, and we have to be credible. You know, as a community, we want to be credible. And I get excited about this stuff. And I think that, you know, my personal opinion is, there is an intelligence engaging humankind, no doubt about it. That's a proven fact. Mm-hmm. I mean, those three videos from the gun camera footage videos are really proof that there's an intelligence engaging us.
Yeah.
But what is the source of it? Well, I don't know that yet.
Well, it's just like you said. You saw something you couldn't identify. It was in the air. It was some sort of phenomena. You checked everything. Therefore, you've got a UAP.
Yeah.
So exactly. That is. Yeah. People think that it is always associated with aliens. So it's Josh and I have said this 1,000 times. We have to stop asking people, do you believe in UFOs? Because UFOs are... they're there. We
That's
have
a proven fact.
Hundreds and thousands of cases of unidentified flying objects or aerial phenomena that exist. It is a proven fact. The question is what do you believe they are?
Yeah.
Yeah. The conversation is different. Yeah.
Yeah. And to me, I'm very careful in my own mind, for my own heart and mind, but also as my role as an investigator, I'm very careful to separate belief from fact, right?
Yep.
And look, I'm not criticizing belief, because belief is really part of the human cognition process. So, you know, it's like what a theory is, right? So there are certain things that we know, but there's gaps between what we know and what we don't, right? But what a theory is we say, hey, we know this is a fact and this is a fact, but between there, we don't know, but we're gonna theorize that it's this. And then what you do is you test it and try and prove it, and either it's your theory is correct or it's different, and then you adjust, right? This is the whole process. And so belief is the way that we get from point A to point B between what we know and what we don't know. And so it's necessary. But the problem with humans is sometimes we put belief even above truth. And I think we've seen that in our society. In areas other than ufology, and it's the limitation of humans. So we have to be careful. So in my own mind, when it comes to ufology and my credibility as a MUFON investigator or commenting like here tonight, you know, I just want to make sure that I clearly state what is my belief versus what is a known fact, right? And so we've talked about a lot of things tonight that are proven facts. Absolutely. Yep. And then there's a few things that are kind of our belief, which is cool. That's fine.
Right.
Just, I really don't like it when somebody purports an opinion as a proven fact.
Yeah.
You know, they state it in that way and that whole thing. And that's just not cool. And that doesn't serve anyone well. So I just want to make that distinction now, even for our conversation. And I know you guys are in the very same camp I am.
And so let's go camping, Shane.
Let's go. We've done some CE5.
We caught some weird stuff.
Weird light off at a distance. Yeah. Right?
So talk about fact. We have some stuff that happened that's not explainable. But I'll give you guys just one little insight on a UFO investigation where it helps me kind of, you know, sort out fact from fiction. So when probably 80% of our cases are lights in the sky, right? Even like the lights behind you, Josh, right? You don't know what that light is, and we will never know. We weren't there. We didn't do it. We don't see it. You cannot tell from that video what that light is. Now we guess, or, you know, have, you know, theories on what that is. But the fact is we don't know. So we have to just be really careful, you know, when we, you know, as an investigator, one of the things I do, and thank goodness for TTSA, because they kind of help me, when Lou Elizondo comes out and he says, hey, look, we have these six observables now that ATIP came up with for identifying something as a UAP. So some of them are like instantaneous acceleration, clearly anti-gravity, you know, performance issues, you know, transmedium capability, blah, 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 these things. Well, what I do is when I see a light in the sky, I compare it to those five or six observables. And I say, is it demonstrating any one of those? If it's not, again, it's a light in the sky. I know I don't know what it is, but it's not demonstrating any of those performances, then, you know, I'm going to have to say, you know, is it unexplainable or is it explainable? So a lot of times we see lights in the sky and they just go across, and, you know, there's a weirdness about them. They maybe they don't blink, or maybe they kind of drift, or maybe they turn. And, you know, there's some things that based on their performance, they are cues to help you establish whether they could be something known versus something unknown. Right. So I'm just trying to help you guys, you know, the audience understand that I'm not a debunker. I'm skeptical in an appropriate degree.
There's a
methodology for identifying what is unknown, but most likely something that is explainable versus, hey, that did some crazy ass shit.
Yeah.
And that is not explainable.
Right.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to call that a true unknown. But if it just drifts in a straight line and it's weird and okay, well, it's most likely something explainable.
I was out by, what's that lake out there in the north?
Pleasant?
Yeah. I was out there with my wife once. We were in for a visit and just pulled over to the side of the road. It was like a full moonlit night, so I didn't expect to see very much. But we were sitting on the side of the road and looked over to my left, and a light was tracking across the sky. And then all of a sudden, it shifted 145 degrees and shot off in the other direction. Yeah. You know, we don't have anything that does that. There's satellites don't do that. You know, that's something else. So,
yep, that's great an Atari example.
Game, Josh. That's an Atari game.
Yeah.
Yar's playing Pong. Revenge. Yar's Revenge. Is
okay.
All your baser belong to us. Okay. That is. So Shane, we're getting ready to wrap up here. But before we go, I did want to mention Phoenix New Times this past week did an amazing article on the Phoenix Lights, which you had an opportunity to be interviewed for among a number of others. But I just wanted to just kind of to reach out for that and you know, just give you a second to talk about, you know, that experience and what that was like, because of course, who doesn't want to be interviewed, you know, and especially here, one of the most famous events in Phoenix history, and they call you.
that was awesome. Benjamin Leatherman was the journalist who had written the article, and he contacted me, and we had a conversation much like what we were having. And the article really he did a really great job, I thought, because he interviewed a variety of people. You know, he summarized the event, and then he talked to, like, you know, some of the military and some of the law enforcement, and many of the different witnesses who went on the record and recorded what they saw, interviewed myself and Dr. Kitai and others, and just did a great job laying out the evidence for the reality of that case. And again, you know, as you guys had mentioned earlier, that, you know, each year this thing is really celebrated here, and the local news channels, you know, they always give Dr. Kitai time. They always have a little bit of a blurb on it regarding the event, and it was a big deal here in Arizona. So I appreciate New Times for doing that. You know, we have an annual boot camp here in Arizona for investigators to come and get trained, and we sponsor that, put that on. This November when we did it, Vice magazine came and they were with us the whole time. They
gotta
did a
love
Vice article,
man.
On it. Yeah. No, it was really cool and a lot of fun. They were great guys. They were, you know, tied to our hip basically, mm-hmm. and they got to experience really the whole boot camp thing, which was really cool. But so my point bringing that out is that there's genuine interest out there, and people mm-hmm. are thirsting and hungry for information about it, and people think that it's cool and of interest, and, you know, I just think that's awesome. And even the institutional organizations that have always kind of poo-pooed it, you know, say NASA and others, you know, since what, 2004, they started discovering exoplanets, and the whole conversation went from, oh, there's no life anywhere, to how could there not be life elsewhere, right? And so now
the Fermi paradox.
Exactly. And even now NASA is like, oh yeah, there's the most likely life out there, and we're looking for it, you know. I mean, that just floored me. You know, you always had SETI, but they kind of never really emphasized the reality of life elsewhere type of thing. We're looking for signals, but, you know, I mean, I don't want to dog them, but, you know, I mean, at least it's some effort.
Poor SETI. They've been
And you know, Seth and his attitude towards it, and some of these guys. But you know what? As we have already learned, say with John Ramirez, is that, you know, you got the party line from the government officials and organizations, and they downplay and minimize it all. But just think about it with SETI. I mean, how many millions of dollars have they spent over decades on that? Yeah. And to say, oh, you UFO people, you're silly and oh, blah, blah. But our role is to look for alien life, but it's going to be in the form of a, you know, radio signal. And that's
because there's an alien with a ham radio sitting next to a dead Art Bell.
But, you know, there was really interesting. I'll make a note here that there was an article in Forbes today talking about the TESS spacecraft, so TESS. They estimate that NASA will find an additional 12,519 exoplanets by 2024.
Yeah. That's insane. Well, and you guys are probably, you've read, NASA hired 24 theologians recently to advise them. And the real reason why, probably, I think it even mentioned it, was the James Webb telescope's going to go online, I think, in June.
It already went online.
It did? Okay.
Yeah, there's only one or two pictures so far, but...
Okay. But the idea is, or I don't know if I would call it a fear, but the thought is that they potentially could find evidence of life with that telescope, and they want to be prepared to deal with people and let them know in a way that, you know, the public can handle it. So, it's a different world today, guys. It really is.
No longer
scientifically. Yeah.
It is. Well, even in the New Times, they had a secondary article that talks about Arizona has the sixth most UFO sightings in the United States, only behind places like New York and Florida and Texas. LA, the big, you know, just the big states. They ain't even talking about cities, because Phoenix is ranked pretty high up, but in terms of that. But I mean, here we are. We've got two amazing articles, you know, just that. And then Forbes is talking about TESS. And it's just, what an amazing time that we live in. And I don't know that this would have happened if it wouldn't have been for things like the Phoenix Lights or TTSA and Lou coming out and all of these things that have been happening over the past 25 years.
Which, you know,
normalize it.
It was probably all set in place or set in motion back with the Brookings report. I'm sure when they had the Brookings report that said the people aren't ready, I'm sure there was immediately followed up a document that says here's how to get them ready.
Mm-hmm. Stuff, you know. What that was 1953-ish or something, and the Robertson panel, and we need to debunk this. But good point. Yeah, you're not going to have a recognition of a problem without creating a solution, right?
That's the government way, right?
Yeah, so, good point. Yeah.
Well, we're going to get out of here, Shane, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to quickly plug the MUFON stuff as well as your book and just anything else you got going on that you wanted people to know about.
Okay, if you're interested in the Phoenix MUFON meetings, they are held monthly, and you can go to phoenixmufon.com and get the schedule and who's speaking and that sort of thing. It's $15. It's a 3-hour meeting. We do some fun stuff like raffles at halftime, and then we all go out to lunch with the speaker, and sometimes we go and do a night skywatch, so that's very cool. And then as far as my book, came out June of 2020. It's available on Amazon. It's called UAP, A Beginner's Guide to Researching UFOs. And it really is, I wrote it because of what happened in 2017, and that the taboo was lifted and knew a lot of people were interested. And so I thought it would be good to have them have a source where they could go and kind of bypass some of the nonsense and the rabbit holes that have traditionally been associated with ufology. And you know, I kind of outline just, you know, what's good information, what's bad information, you know, the importance of, you know, evidence, and just a whole bunch of topics. Yep. But and the idea of that was really just to help people who are newly interested get off on the right foot. And so hopefully, if you're interested in that, I think it's for $14.95 on amazon.com. you can search my name or or the name of the book. And
we'll have the link in our summary as well. It is my go-to book for UFO. I have a go-to book for ghost hunting that I love. It's about the same size and it's absolutely perfect. And this is my go-to book, Shane. And I mean that for UAP. Josh and I have been using it since we first met you and got our copies. It has really opened our eyes to a lot of things. So thank you, sir, so much for joining us and coming on and talking about the Phoenix Lights. And as usual, you are always welcome on again. And I know we will see each other soon.
Yeah, thanks so much, you guys. Really appreciate it. And can't wait till we can get together again and go sky watching.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Shane Hurd. Shane Hurd, ladies and gentlemen. I love that man so much. What an absolute pleasure, as usual. Please, please, please do not forget to pick up his book, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, A Beginner's Guide to Researching UFOs. You can find it straight on Amazon. I'm going to have the link again in the summary there because it's an amazing book. If you got Kindle Unlimited, you can read for free, though I don't think Shane's going to make money that way. So I take it back. I don't know.
They may pay something. They have to pay something.
You are going to earn him a nickel. A shiny nickel.
A nickel per page. I don't know.
Yeah, a good old shiny nickel. Anyways, thank you, Shane Hurd. Thank you, man, and all that great conversation. Phoenix Lights. It's still something that is a massive enigma to this day. There's no doubt about it. People here are just still talking about it. Like, I'm going to be going, or I might have went last weekend. I don't know when this drops, but going to see the 25th anniversary documentary that's coming out. Alice Cooper's going to be there talking because he saw it as well. All kinds of famous folks saw it. Kurt Russell saw it, you know.
Alice Cooper of, like, the band?
The Alice Cooper, yes.
The Alice Cooper.
Of the golf. Of the golf and rock and roll.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be there. Awesome. As part of the event, it's like a 4 or 5 hour event. They've got vendors that are going to be there and speakers and all kinds of cool stuff. So Sarah and I are both going to that. I'm really, really excited.
I'm super jealous.
Yeah, you should be. It's March 20th. Fly in. Foo. Victoria's talking about flying in, man. No. My friend Victoria.
Prices. Tickets are outrageous. Spring training.
Sorry, it's not Disney.
That's spring training out there, man.
Dude, spring training's canceled right now.
Is it?
Because they're on strike.
They're on strike.
Yeah, they're on strike, man. So it's super cheap. They're trying to get people out of here, dude. I'm not even joking. Flights are cheap. Anywho. Yeah, so please make sure to go to unxnetwork.com to check out all the amazing shows, including Ryan Sprague, who we talked about, Somewhere in the Skies. He's on there. A lot of our good friends are on there. Whitley Stryper, who I want to be good friends with, is on there. Yeah.
Hey, Race, make it happen.
Now, that was closer to Race's voice.
That was.
I wasn't even trying to. But yeah,
like so that one time you get the turkey call just right, you know?
Or you can go to the ConvergenceEnigma.com. theconvergenceenigma.com. There you can check out our archived episodes, not just from when we have gone back a few episodes as the Convergence Enigma, but all the way back to Josh's first episode with me as Fearscape.
All the way back
to the Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Make sure to check out fearscapemedia.com for all of the other amazing podcasts. New one just dropped, Books and Booze podcast, where they're talking about books and drinking booze. I mean, how can it get any better than that?
I thought it was going to be about books and ghosts, you know, books and
booze. And booze.
Yeah.
Or I thought it was going to be about books and, like, just hating people.
Booze.
Boy, we're hilarious.
Yeah.
Also, make sure to go to and check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fearscapemedia. There you can find our show Astral Stew in YouTube form, or you can go to fearscapemedia.com and find it in podcast form if you don't want to watch my face, which is weird.
Or you can just listen to it on YouTube too. But
yeah, you can if you got that special thing where you can, like, close it off or you pay the premium or whatever.
Or if you open it in a browser window on your phone, you can do that too.
That's true. That is the sneaky way to do it. Yeah. That is the sneaky way to do it. You got to love it, man. You got to absolutely love it.
Anywho, and also don't forget about blacktrianglecoffee.com, promo code
TCEBTC
15.
15. I didn't know if you were going to say 1-5 or 15. So I failed you. Yeah. So TCE BTC 15. So it's, yeah, get some 15% coffee.
15% off your entire order. Yeah.
And it's not it only really does it help out a really great local company in Arizona, but it helps us out as well. You know, so let them know that we got some great, amazing fans out there. That's what we always tell all these sponsors, that we have the most amazing fans, because we do.
We do.
We absolutely do. Anyways, on that, Josh, let's go ahead and get out of here. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to the Convergence Enigma with Josh and Stefan. I have been your host, Stefan Gearhart, and I will catch y'all on the flip side. But remember, keep your eyes on the skies.
And this has been Josh. The truth is now.
Darn skippy it is. And remember, folks, please keep questioning, keep seeking, keep searching. Good night, everybody.
Good night.